Hey, what's happening? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. This episode's brought to you by my boys, the mighty McGuire Harley-Davidson, out there in the Bay Area. If you live in Northern California, go to McGuire Harley-Davidson, located at 93 First Avenue, North Pacheco, California. Check them out. Go down there. Get yourself a new bike. Fuck it. You deserve it. Do it. Get a new motorcycle. Throw caution to the wind. Who cares? Say, fuck this. I owe myself a new motorcycle. Go get yourself one. Head down to Contra Costa County's number one Harley-Davidson dealer. My good friends, McGuire Harley. You can find them at McGuire-HD.com or follow them on Twitter. They got an amazing service department. They got great motor clothes department. Whatever you need, they got it. Ryan and my boys down there at McGuire Harley-Davidson. Open every day of the week. Go see them. Tell them you're a Del Reza. Tell them you want a deal. Give me a deal. I heard it on Del Reza. Let There Be Talk. Head in there, man. McGuire Harley-Davidson. Been a sponsor here on Let There Be Talk for almost a year. Just fantastic people. Also brought to you by my boys, Catatonic Graphic Solutions. Catatonic, you want to get some stickers made or any kind of artwork, anything for your business, your rock band, your comedian, anything you do, these guys can cover it. Maybe you just want to graffiti your neighborhood with some stickers, Del Razor sticker style. Hit them up, man. Go to catatonic.com, C-A-D-A-T-O-N-I-C. If you've been seeing my stickers on Instagram, these are the guys that do it. Follow them on Instagram, too. They do all kinds of great artwork. They'll hook you up, man. I love them. They got contests running all the time where you can win shit, man. Like 1,000 free vinyl stickers, whatever. Catatonic, your art solutions are solved. Hit them up. They got a contest right now going. Where you can win 1,000 stickers. Find out about it. The 1,000 sticker giveaway. The 1,000 sticker giveaway. Anyway, thanks to my sponsors. Thank you, guys. I love you guys. Here we are, another episode of Let There Be Talk. It is December 29th. We all survived the holidays. Now we're sitting back, ready to light the candles of 2015 this week, right? Big New Year's Eve, which means all those goddamn New Year's Eve end of the year lists. I'm going to do one. I'll do one this year. I'll put it out as a podcast. Tune in on Thursday or whatever day. What day is New Year's Eve? Let me look this year. New Year's Eve is on a 31st, which is, what is that? A Wednesday. Midweek party. Nothing like a midweek party. Just imagine if you have one of those jobs where you don't get the day off the next day. You just go in completely useless. From too much cocaine and booze, right? I'm going to be at the Comedy Store doing 3 shows that night. So come down to the Comedy Store. I'll be in the Belly Room with Court and Joe Bartnick. That's going to be fantastic. And then in one of the other rooms, the original room or the main room. But come down to the Comedy Store, man. That place goes off on New Year's Eve. If you don't live in L.A., then just enjoy yourself on New Year's Eve. And don't fucking die, right? Don't die. Because just think, if you die, you're going to miss all those end of the year lists the next day. You don't want to miss those. Yeah, I'll put that out Thursday with my interview with Orchid. Interviewed them a couple nights ago at the Whiskey. I was going to put it out today, but I decided since it's a rock and roll one, do it for the New Year's Eve.
Rock and roll!
How's everybody doing? You have a good week? Mine was pretty good. I just worked like crazy. And spent a little time over at my boy Russell Peters' house for some decompressing. Chilling with him. Had some good meals. Hung out with some good friends. And here we are. Back into the action. Great episode today. My boy Pauly Shore is here. This is an unusual episode. I recorded it yesterday. It started at his house in Silver Lake, which is right up the street from my house, which is also known as the hipster Ground Zero. If you Google Silver Lake, it'll say something like, a place where hipsters gather and live, sneaker shops and high-end coffee stores. It's telling you that. But it started there, 2 o'clock. We get 25 minutes in. He's like, oh, bro, I got to go to my other house. We go to his other house, which is by far the most spectacular home I've seen in Hollywood. And he bought it in 1997. It sits on the top of the Hollywood Hills, and it has 360 views. And when you look at it, you realize Jokes bought that house. Hard work, a lifer, and you see the cream that comes from the hard work, you know? So we're up there hanging for a little bit, then we go have a burger, and then we finish the interview over at his mother's house, Mitzi Shore, legendary Mitzi Shore, who started the Comedy Store in 1972. I don't want to tell any more about the interview because it's very, very cool. I love Pauly Shore. He's a fantastic friend. He's funny as hell. And he's been in the biz all his life. You can learn tons of stuff from this guy. People always hit me up for advice. Fuck, I'm 5 years in. Ain't shit. I don't know nothing. Listen to these legends on the podcast, man, and you'll learn so much. I'm glad to know these guys. I'm glad they're my friend. And I'm glad you guys get to hear the interview. So sit back, check it out. Have a great New Year's Eve. Keep the reviews going on iTunes and the subscriptions. Oh, real quick, shout out Steve McDonald. Thanks for the amazing donation to Let There Be Talk. Wow. Got a couple of donations lately helping. I'm trying to get some new equipment here. And you guys are helping out. Keep rocking. Tell a friend. Here he is, Mr. Pauly Shore, the Wiz Body. Yeah.
You're at the bottom 100?
Get out of here, bitch. Pauly Shore today.
What's up?
Dude, I've been trying to get you on the show for 2 years.
I know. Thanks for having me.
Get out of here. I was like, I wanted you 2 years ago.
Well, yeah, but you didn't have a podcast then.
I did.
Oh,
it
you did?
It was just unknown.
Oh.
I'm so glad you're doing it now.
Thank you.
I love Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore's cool.
He is, man. It's
You know, I'm not as popular as Louis C.K. and Chris D'Elia and Whitney Cummings.
Yeah, you're pretty popular, though, because... Yeah.
Those guys sell more tickets than me, though.
Pauly, you did theaters and stuff. Like, if you put their career up against your career back when, you know, MTV and all that, there's no comparison.
But I don't think people know I do stand-up.
Well,
because I don't do any stand-up specials.
Well, the thing is, you've had a career now, what, 25 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, everybody wants that. Like a band, a painter.
No, I'm not. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the size of the venues.
Right.
I mean, these guys are fucking like Joe Rogan and fucking Bill Burr and Whitney. Like, they're saying, like, Chris D'Elia just did the Mirage.
Yeah, but you were giant 20 years ago.
I know. Well, why aren't I giant anymore?
Well,
flip that around.
Dude, you are giant still. Mm. You know, I know. I went on the road with you, which was fantastic. We did the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And you have a career that everybody wants.
Mm.
What I'm saying is, look at the guys that you started with 20 years ago. Most of them aren't doing shows on Showtime or documentaries or films. They're not even working anymore.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
have obtained a career that keeps going. You're going to work till the day you die.
Yeah.
And everybody wants that. You're going to have highs and you're going to have like mediums. Mm. You're not going to have lows because lows are like cruise ships.
Mm.
And you don't do those.
Do you know any good cruise ships?
Well, if you can do the rock ones, it's great. Yeah. You could do
Have you
all
done it?
Well, my buddy, I'm trying to do a rock
one. Let's set it up.
Yeah, how great would that
be? I'm down.
Well, I can get you on that.
Well, let's go. I thought you said cruise ships are the lowest.
They are, but that...
So you said you want me to get... I'm confused, bro.
Get out of here! Sweet baby, we's on the building.
Oh, the themed ones are good.
Yeah, like the rock one.
Right.
Or, you know, like they have... Kiss has one. They have a rock one called Shipwrecked. All these, they just did an alt comedy tour, fantastic, Marin and all those guys. So, you know, they're out there.
I just think that, you know, that I'm at a place now where I need to develop a real serious hour of stand-up and have people talk about it. You know what I mean? Because, like, you saw me last night. Like, I go on stage, I tell jokes.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, well, you know, like, what is he going to do?
Yeah, the wheeze.
Yeah, what's he going to do on stage? And they don't have that. And that's my fault. You know
well,
what I mean?
That's
my fault.
The thing is, I compare you a lot to Bobcat in a way where you guys came out with characters.
Mm.
Bobcat was my favorite comedian on the planet.
He was great, dude.
Growing up in San Francisco,
yeah.
He was my comedian. You know, like, I love the guy.
Yeah.
I saw Bobcat about 2 years ago. He became he worked for
a director,
Jimmy
Kimmel, yeah.
And then he directed... you know, movies that are fantastic, but now he's doing stand-up again, and he got rid of the character, and he dove into some great fucking writing.
Mm.
And you know, he came out with a special called You Don't Look the Same Either.
Right, yeah.
And he started doing the groundwork. Because if you're a comedian, you got to think, a lot of people don't know who the Pauly Shore Wheeze or the Bobcat character were if they're out in a club now.
Right.
So if you're out killing right now, people go, "Whoa, that guy was great."
They
might not know the back history.
Yeah, they don't know the history. Yeah,
and you have a venue to work every night at it, which is amazing because you go on all the time, which I love about you.
Yeah,
and you're like I talk about it. A lot of rich kids just suck ass, but you work your ass off, and you always have.
Well, I even though I grew up like wealthy, like I never asked my mom for anything ever. Like financially, ever since I was 18, I've always made my own money this day.
That's awesome.
To this day, I've never ever, you know, called my mom up and said, "Hey, mom, can you please give me $500?
You know
I need." Like I never, you know.
Now, what was that? Just because you like wanted to make yourself so people weren't like, he's a rich kid? Because Hollywood's full of rich kids.
Yeah. I mean, partly that, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, like, I have two brothers and a sister, and they're both not in the entertainment business. They grew up in it as well. I think that I got the funny stick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just, you know, I grew up in it, yeah, but also, like, I love it, you know? So,
yeah.
My come from is always about, like, you know, just, I don't know, the work, you know?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Like, you know, people are always like, oh, I want to be famous. I want to be rich. Like when they come at like all these reality stars and all that shit is like, that's not the good come from. The come from is the work, and then you get the pussy and the money and the fame and all that stuff. But
that's
like a true artist. Like a true artist are people, you know, that you know, like a guitarist or a real singer will like, you know, like lock himself. Like Eminem is like a true artist. Like he'll like lock himself in his room and just fucking write, you know what I mean? And then he gets all that other stuff.
Yeah, so it all comes from the work.
Yeah, my come from has always been about, you know, about trying to write or trying to create stuff, you know?
Let's talk about how old are you?
46.
46, I'm 49.
Mm.
Your mom opens the comedy store in 72.
Yeah.
And how old are you at that time?
I was like four.
You start hanging at the comedy store at four?
Yeah, pretty much.
And when do you really start to realize you're at the Comedy Store? Because I don't remember four myself.
I think my whole life, I just remember always being there. Right. It's just weird for me to be there. I even told this to Whitney the other night. It's just weird for me to be there and watch all you guys. Because every 10 years, there's like a new kind batch. Of crop of comics. And like Whitney and Mark Maron and Rogan, like, you know, and you know, myself. Like, you know, you went on and, you know, it was sold out. But it wasn't like it was back then.
Really?
No. I mean, just because there's people in the seats, there was a different energy.
Is that right?
Yeah. It was better.
Back then?
Back then, yeah. That's just because you had Eddie Murphy, like, you had, like, real big stars, like Whitney and Joe and myself, and, like, you know, like, we're stars, but it's not, like, you know, like, fucking global, like, fucking, you know, or yep. Kennison, you know what I mean, or Dice. You had, like, in the main room, you'd have Dice, you'd have Roseanne, you'd have, you know, Howie Mandel, you'd have Jim Carrey, you'd have, you know, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, you know, those type of right. people, like, in the 80s.
I think the difference is... Yeah. Is everyone watched main TV, like mainstream TV. Mm,
yeah.
So these guys were on TV and movies.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in your living room. So they were actually big TV and movie stars mm-hmm. and comedians.
Yeah.
I mean, because I was back watching comedy back then. I was hanging in the store in 88, 89. And yeah, it fucking hit me seeing Dice the
yeah,
first
Dice
time.
Dice was like
in the main room. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Did
yeah,
you
yeah,
hear
yeah,
what that guy said yeah, to those people?
Yeah.
And he's not fighting?
Yeah. And it was like, you know, he couldn't do that now.
Yeah.
You know, because it wouldn't be as funny now. But at the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At the time, it was, I'm just talking about the energy and the feel, you know what I mean?
Of the room and the excitement of people.
Yeah. And it's great now.
Yeah.
But just back then. And maybe it's because also I was younger.
Yeah, it's like when I went to concerts.
Yeah,
I talk
exactly.
about it all the time. It's the same thing. Because yeah. it is electric, but we just don't feel it anymore. Because when we were young and yeah. Van Halen walked on the stage,
it was
your fucking arm
deal,
hair,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
jacked up. And they're
yeah,
playing.
Maybe age has a lot to do
I
with it.
I think so. And also, know? We've just been around so yeah. much, we're desensitized.
Yeah.
Because I do see Bill Burr walk on and people's fucking faces light up.
They get crazy, right?
Or when Chris Rock does yeah. a secret spot at the original room.
Yeah.
I actually brought Chris Rock up about 6 months ago, and I never heard this before. Jeff Scott looked at me and said, "We've got a special guest." Right. And I said, "Oh, who is it?" He whispered in my ear, and I was losing my mind inside because right. it was one of the reasons I started comedy. I said Chris Rock, and the place, people's heads popped off.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, I never seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like how people are like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And same with CK when he walked on doing a special last week.
Mm-hmm.
People were legitimately fucking mm-hmm. going crazy. So I think it's just different. Like you said, you've been in that room all your life.
Mm.
You're early on and you remember it and you go, this is fantastic when you're young.
Yeah.
And you're seeing these guys at the ground level.
Yeah, I saw a lot of George Carlin too, a lot of Rodney Dangerfield.
Right.
And all those guys. So I don't know.
Now, you're hanging out with those guys, right? You're
well,
like
George
a kid.
Carlin wasn't, he would just kind of come and go. He wasn't like hanging out at the store. And Rodney, yeah, was.
Yeah.
Rodney I met through Sam. You know, because Rodney did his young, he did a HBO Young Comedians thing. Did you know about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah.
So Rodney is the king to me.
Yeah.
And Kinnison. And,
yeah.
You know, those guys watching that when Rodney had that special and he's introducing these
yeah.
new guys.
Yeah, it was legit.
You're just going, what the fuck?
Yeah. And so I had Rodney when I did my MTV show at Spring Break in the early 90s, I had Rodney on my show. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great, right?
Yeah, I remember going to rehearse with him, and he, you know, he called us, you know, he called me and the producer into his hotel room, and he opens the door, he's wearing his robe, and he's got his, like, balls hanging out, he's got a joint in his hand, he's like, all right, who wants to get fucking stoned here? And then we all, like, got stoned, and then we kind of came up with what we were going to do for the special.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's like, how old was he? And he got still
he was probably his, like, 50s or 60s.
Just here. Partying.
Yeah.
I love that, right?
Yeah, he was.
I'm afraid to party now.
Yeah, not good.
Because I don't want to die.
Yeah, some girl was like doing coke last night, and she's like, oh, I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
yeah, when you're in your 40s, you don't want to do that, right?
Oh, you don't want to get a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
You're just at the Grove cruising. I'm going to get a new iPod today, and boom.
Right.
You know, I did a lot of coke back in the day at the store.
Oh, wow.
And I just think about how much coke, and then I quit, and I always think it's going to get me on the back end.
Mm.
You know what I mean? You quit, but later it gets you.
Yeah.
The store was so wild in the 80s, right?
Mm. Yeah, it was.
It really was.
Well, I think life was a lot more wild. Now it's like everyone is very aware of, you know, being caught, you know?
Yeah.
Cameras and being caught.
Snitches.
Yeah, it becomes programming for TV, you know, like, oh, like Ray Rice smacked his wife in the elevator, and it becomes like, you know, a 3-month, you know, news story, you know what I mean? So now it's like everyone, you know, I mean, if they had cameras and shit back then, you know.
Well, if you read these Hollywood mogul books, like Don Simpson, High Concept.
Right,
you read these books, and you're going like, hey, this shit now, you're just hearing about. But let me tell you, every guy on TV.
That's what was Hollywood. Yeah, that's what it was about.
This shit was fucking.
Dude, you want to hear a crazy fucking story, dude? Like, my agent back in, or my attorney back in the day used to represent Dennis Rodman, right? And he told me a story that one time that Dennis Rodman took this girl into his hotel room. This is when he was hot, like on the Bulls and shit. And his hair was all like orange or green or whatever.
Did his hair a different color?
Yeah. And he said, the girl said to him, said that right when they shut the hotel room door, the girl said to him, said, hey, if you don't write me for a check for $10,000, I'm going to say you tried to rape me.
Oh.
Just
oh,
like
man.
That.
That's so, like that scene in Top 5, the Chris Rock movie. I heard that.
Oh,
really
right.
Happened.
Yeah.
You know, but they changed it. It was in Chicago, I guess.
Yeah, so he wrote the check to her.
That's fucking.
It's fucked up, dude.
It's brutal out there, you know?
That's why you have to record it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You bring a girl to your hotel room, you got to record that shit, dude. I record everything.
It's weird, man.
You know?
It's,
I'm glad I'm old now, so it doesn't mean it. I don't care about it as much anymore. Also, another thing that's fucked up are porno stars.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, you used to be able to fuck porno stars, like, you know, like have a good time with them. Now they're all escorts.
Yeah, you're right.
That's
weird.
That's not cool, man.
Now, you know what I mean? When you start doing comedy, you told me something interesting. Your mom wouldn't let you work in there. Or
I decided not to work in there.
I gotcha.
Yeah. I decided for 2 years.
Because you wanted to not be judged?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was my mom's club. You know what I mean? It was like the young kid. You know, I didn't want to be, you know, like, oh, he's just on stage because it's his mom. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I went around to other clubs, the Laugh Factory, LA Cabaret, for at least 2 years before I went on stage at the Comedy Store.
Right. Now, what makes you want to do it? Like, of course, you said you had the funny bone, but who do you see? Is it like Kinison or someone that you go, fuck, I want to do stand-up?
I always knew I was going to be a stand-up.
Right, because your dad
ever
did it.
Ever since I was little, ever since I was a kid. My mom says she used to lock me in the back bedroom purposely, you know, and I'd smack my head up. I used to have bruises on my forehead all the time, always. Like, if you see older pictures of me as an infant, I had bruises on my forehead because I used to bang my head against the crib. My mom says she did that purposely because she programmed me to be a stand-up.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because I would never get any attention, so I'd smack my head against the crib.
That's
and she's like, I did that on a purpose. Yeah. So it was always like, you know, always kind of knew it. I remember when I was little, I used to play drums. You know, I used to be in a band.
Really?
Yeah, we used to play the main room all the time before the Comedy Store Players. I have video of it.
Whoa, what?
Yeah.
You were a drummer? Who was in the band? Was it a rock band?
Yeah, it was like a rock band. We used to play cover songs like The Kinks or The Cheap Trick or Turning Japanese or shit like that. And we were really good.
Well, you wanted to be in a band, huh?
I was in a band.
I know, but I mean, you wanted to play rock.
Yeah, I was obsessed. This guy named Dean Zuckerman, he was the lead guitar player. Then I had Barry Robinson, Smokey Robinson's son. He was the bass player. And this guy, Richard Azara, he played the guitar, I think. And we were called We Don't Know Yet. That was the name of our band.
And how old were you?
I was probably about, I was in junior high, so like probably like 13, 14, 15 around there.
And what bands you into at the time, like Kiss, stuff like
no,
that?
No, I wasn't into Kiss.
Oh, no, you were into some good shit.
I was like into The Clash. I was into The Stones. I was into The Kinks. Very big Kinks.
Yeah.
Very, really big fans of The Kinks. Cheap Trick. But I remember playing the drums, and I didn't like it. because I was in the back.
Right.
I wanted to be in the front.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so that's when I, you know, was like, fuck this. I want to do stand-up. You know what I mean?
You never tried singing?
I sang.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I mean, as a front man?
No, uh-uh.
Right.
No.
Now, are you pounding around in on the Sunset Strip back then, like the clubs? You go into the Roxy,
yeah, big
and
time.
The Rainbow,
yeah,
and all that?
Yeah, it was mostly when I was really young. Like, I think it was like the 70s. Like, there was the punk scene.
Yeah.
Like, at the Whiskey. And, like, Black Flag was playing there and the Germs and shit like that.
You were going to that?
No, it was too wild.
Right.
I was just a kid.
Right.
But I remember my mom would drive me home from the Comedy Store late at night to the Doheny House, and we would drive by, like, you know, the Whiskey, the Roxy, and Gazzari's, and it was like all these punkers would like spit on our windshield and stuff. Like,
whoa, really?
Yeah, it'd spit on everyone's windshield.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. It'd just be a gangster.
They were punkers.
Yeah.
Punk rockers were fucking nuts back then.
Yeah.
You know, like crazy. That's... Like they would be out into the street.
Right.
Like all the time. Like, you know, you'd have to like drive around.
Take the fucking go down to like Santa Monica or something. Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much.
Dodge the punkers.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, it was just scary. You know, it was a scary, you know, from the Whiskey to the Roxy to the Rainbow to Gazzari's, which is, you know, One Oak now. It was the Key Club. It was just like a scary, like four blocks.
Right.
You know, but that was like where I grew up. And then I went to school at West Hollywood Elementary.
Oh,
which
wow.
was a block below the Roxy.
Whoa.
And that was kindergarten through fourth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's dope.
And that's the schoolyard right below the Roxy.
Now, you grew up at the Doheny House, right?
Yeah.
You guys recently sold it?
Yeah.
That place was beautiful.
Yeah, it was a pretty sick house.
Yeah. Like that must have been awesome. Like, you grew up right in the fucking, the heart of Hollywood. Yeah.
You know who used to live up my street is Ricardo Montalban.
Really?
Yeah.
Remember Fantasy
Tattoo?
Island.
Remember Fat Tattoo?
Fantasy,
yeah,
Tattoo.
Island. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He used to always drive his like weird like old school car down the street and always wave to him and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
and I think who else? Who was it? Andy, what the fuck's his name? Andy Williams, the singer.
Andy Williams?
Yeah, he lived next door to me, and then a guy named Artie Butler, who was the conductor for Neil Sedaka. He lived next to my mom as well.
Wow. That house is awesome.
Yeah.
Now, so you decide to start doing comedy. Are you doing the Wheeze character right away, or what are you doing
before? I pretty much was the Wheeze.
You were the Wheeze.
It was funny. I was watching this kind of documentary on Eminem the other night, and it's just about how he had Eminem and he had Slim Shady, who was kind of like this alter ego.
Right.
Like, and I was thinking about, like, was that me? And I'm like, no, I kind of was the Wheeze all the time.
You mean you were that
guy? Pretty much, yeah.
Like, you talked like that?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, you know, I was like, you know, I would dress like, you know, I'd dress like in my mom's clothes and then like in my clothes. And then I like watched like Steven Tyler and just like, I don't know. Me and my mom were really close. You know what I mean? And, you know, and she was very, if you look at some of her old, the way she dressed and you look how I used to dress, it was similar.
Now,
she had like cut off shirts and shit like that. And
was
scars.
It inspired like by surfer guy like Spicoli? Because that was big in 81, 2 or something, 3, whatever, 83.
I think it was just like Beverly Hills High School, Hollywood, West Hollywood, Pali, San Diego.
Surfer scene.
Yeah, kind of like, it was like, I don't know. It was like a mixture of a whole bunch of shit.
Right. And so you start going on stage and you're just doing this, the Wheeze.
Yeah, it was kind of like, well, when I first went on stage, I wasn't really doing the Wheeze. I was just trying to figure out who I was. Like, I remember I had other comedians kind of write my material.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Angel Salazar wrote my first joke.
The guy from Scarface.
Yeah.
Awesome.
He wrote my first joke.
What was it?
It was like, I grew up in Beverly Hills. My maid's Mexican. My mailman's black. My gardener's Japanese. A day at my house, like a day at the DMV. It was like my joke. And then I had another joke, which was like, Bob McAdoo. Did you hear he just got traded from the Lakers? McAdoo, that sounds like something you eat at, or you do after you eat at McDonald's.
Oh, man.
You know, just bad jokes.
And how old are you?
I was like 17.
17.
Yeah.
Were you nervous at all? Or you?
Yeah, for sure, dude.
Right. And
I'm still nervous sometimes.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where are you going on at? Open mics?
My dad hooked me up with the first place I ever did a play stand-up, which was a place called the Alley Cat Bistro. And that was in Culver City. And that was like a restaurant that happened to have, like, you know what I mean?
Comedy, yeah.
Yeah, comedy. And then after that, it was just like, fuck. I don't have the Laugh Factory a lot.
So you were just going on like regular.
It was me, like Damon Wayans,
right?
Kim Wayans. It was David Alan Greer.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the crew we used to roll with.
So you're.
Oh yeah, Skippy from Family Ties.
Oh yeah,
Mark Price.
Yeah,
he was big, dude.
Really?
He was super popular. Yeah.
Well, that show was huge.
Yeah, it was huge. Hey, can we take a break for a second?
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, pretty good interview so far, right? So we take a break because we're at his house in Silver Lake. And then we finish this interview at his mother's house, Mitzi Shore. And it was just an honor to go over there and finish this interview at his mother's house while she's there. And it was special, man. So here it is, part two of the Pauly Shore interview. Enjoy, people. Your mom, like... So she's running the store, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden she's hit with Parkinson's.
And well, she started the store when she was 40.
40.
You got to understand something. I have a brother and a sister that are in their 60s.
Right.
Scott's like 61, and my sister's going to be 60 in the next couple of years. So my mom got a divorce when I was like 3, and Peter, you know, is a little bit older than me. So she got the store, you know, at like 40.
That's amazing.
So that was like the beginning of her career. See, I'm like 46. I'm like towards the end of my career. You know what I mean? I like started when I was early.
Now,
so
what,
from 20 to 40, she was with my dad, like this married kind of housewife.
While your dad was a touring comedian.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's amazing because... To start a comedy
at 40.
At 40. The funny thing about that is when I started at 44, everybody's like, oh, you're too old to do comedy. Here's a person who starts a club.
A career, yeah.
A career.
At 40.
At 40. And
so she ran it pretty heavy from 40 to 60.
40 to 60.
So she had that run, you know what I mean? And then, you know, 65, 70, she still did it, you know. So like when she turned 70... is when, like, that's the Parkinson's kind of hit. It was interesting because it was what I think I was doing Pauly Shore is Dead. It was like 2003.
Right.
Which it's almost 2015 when this thing's going to air. So I did Pauly Shore is Dead, and that's when, like, me and my brother Scott, we were in Sundance. We were promoting Pauly Shore is Dead, and we got a call that my mom fell. You know, it's like that commercial, you know what I mean? That,
right.
Oh, I've fallen and I can't get it. That type of shit, you know?
At the store or home?
No, she was at home.
Right.
Yeah. She was taking a lot of different medication, too. Those pills, the doctors give you those pills, you know?
Yeah.
She didn't have anyone really monitoring it.
So that's when you really find out she has Parkinson's? Because she couldn't get
it? That's when it kind of started, you know what I mean?
Just, right.
She started, it was hard for her to walk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dice Clay said that if it wasn't my mom, then she would be dead right now.
Oh, because she's such a fighter.
Yeah.
Right. It's crazy because it's like you're close to your mom, and my mom's really what I got. Mm. I'm the only child. I don't talk to my father at all, really. And my mom moved to Florida.
Wow.
Because, you know, couldn't afford California anymore.
Yeah.
So it makes me think, like, you know, it's all we got, you know? It's, like, tough to, like, think about, like, that's your mom, you know? It's so... Mm.
Well, I've talked to some... Because I've prepared for it, for her to pass.
Right.
You know? Because I've talked to a lot of friends that, like, really close friends that have had both their parents pass. And they all say the same thing. They basically say, just because they're not here doesn't mean they're not with you.
Right.
It's kind of like Sam Kennison. You know what I mean? Just because Sam's dead doesn't mean he's not with me. So even though, like, my mom's sick and, you know, at some point she'll pass, like, she's still going to be with me. Just like your mom. You know what I mean? At some point your mom will pass.
But your mom's history will definitely be here too.
Yeah.
She, to me, it's I talk every episode. I talk about the Comedy Store because I think that it saved my life.
Mm.
Because
it saved my life too. It saved everyone's life.
It's true because you got to think about. I'm 44. I played music my whole life, and then I go, well, I don't play music anymore.
Mm.
So now I'm working a job. Mm. I'm working.
Where were you working?
I'm working at Harley Davidson. Mm. I'm selling motorcycles. I figured this is going to be my life. I don't mind part two. Mm. You know, I entertained for years. Now I love motorcycles.
Yeah.
But quickly.
But what?
But quickly, what happens is is why you've never stopped. Is it's a tick in your mind. You know, if I've got to be, I'm on stage. That's what I do.
Mm.
So what am I going to do? Just like play in a cover band? Fuck no.
Mm.
So, you know, I start comedy. And then I go to the store. That's the place I knew from the 80s, you know? Mm. And then all of a sudden I feel alive again. There's people there. It's like rock and roll, you know? And so what I'm trying to say is thank God that she built that, and then it never sold out, you know, because
she built a system, you know what I mean? I always say this to the managers and the people that are running it. You have to be fucking retarded not to be successful at the Comedy Store. Do you understand? Like, meaning the Comedy Store is doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, it has a lot to do with my brother Peter. It has a lot to do with me. It has a lot to do with the management. But it has everything to do with my mom.
Yeah.
Period. You know, we all as a group have to be fucking retarded to not be able to have it be successful because it's a system that she already set up.
Right.
And you just have to stick to the system. You know what I mean? It's like a, you know, college system and there's a flow.
It's in place.
There's a flow. Yeah. All you have to do is just run it the way, you know, the way it is. And then, you know, just add to what she's done already. So she already set it up and now she's in the other room and she's sick from all the work. So it's like, you know, it's my duty to make sure that nothing happens to it, you know, that it sticks, you know, even when I'm gone, you know, that there's a system in place that she set that up. So I'm not trying to, you know, and I don't think my brother Peter or any of us are trying to change it. We just want to keep it.
Well, it's a fucking landmark.
Yeah, well, it's a great system.
Yeah.
It's her system.
It's the only club. I don't think without the Comedy Store, I wouldn't have been able to become a comedian.
Yeah, because it's the system, the development system. Yeah, because you have the Laugh Factory and the Improv, and that's just like, you know, you're either nothing or you're something. There's no in between there.
That's right.
There's no development.
There's no development. Yeah. And thank God.
Well, that's her. That's the lady in the other room right now.
Yeah,
she's the one that started that system. So she developed the comedians.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is, man.
Yeah.
So you know, a lot of people, I always love this when people are like, hey, is that Pauly Shore? What's he do now?
Mm.
I always love that question because I don't like when people say that, like if there's a band still playing and they go, those guys still around?
Mm.
In this weird tone, it's almost a jealousy, I think, of like, really? It's like, yeah, really. Really, that guy fucking works his ass off, goes on every night, and people love him.
I just gave you my spot, though. I got to see if Adam lets you have it. I texted him. Oh, he said, fuck him. I'm going to put on Ari Shaffir. No, I'm just
Am I on?
No, I'm waiting for the text back.
So what I'm saying is, like, I love that you know, like Jacob Dylan and I are tight.
Mm.
And he still just works. Mm. You know what I mean? People know him from One Headlight or whatever. But the guy goes out every summer, plays, and then makes a record, a solo.
Well, you know, I do it for several reasons. You know, the first one is I love to tour. You know, I love hopping on a plane and landing somewhere. And then, you know, I love, you know, just, you know, obviously the stand-up stuff. And I love the fact that, you know, that I'm fortunate that after everything that I've done, there's an audience. And then all of a sudden, I get paid, too. You know, I don't have to do, you know, weird jobs. I don't have to, like...
Yeah, you make a full-blown living.
Yeah, I make a living.
I mean, we just went up to one of the most spectacular homes I've seen in Los Angeles. Mm. And you own it. Yeah. You bought it in 1997. Mm. It's one of the coolest houses I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of rock stars, movie stars. It 360 views. Mm. You bought it in 97 when Pauly Shore probably should have been broke and with a drug habit and, you know, completely burned out.
Yeah, I have this saying, and I might call my autobiography this because I'm putting a book together soon. Called I have this saying that I said a long time ago, and I've stuck with it. It's cool to dance with the devil. Don't become the devil.
That's awesome.
You know what that
I understand
means.
Yeah. What you mean.
So my point is that, and that's for everyone listening. It's like, you know, it's okay to get fucked up. It's okay to have fun. Don't become it. You know, then you become, you know, Amy Winehouse,
right?
You know, Kurt Cobain. You know, all these people, you know, Whitney Houston, you know what I mean? All these people that have taken their life, drugs, you know. I saw a thing, what was it, the Eagles documentary, Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
Did you see the Eagles documentary?
Many times. Yeah. I love it.
Joe Walsh has such a great quote in there. It was something about, like, how, because Joe Walsh used to get really fucked up, like,
big
more
time.
Than anyone. Because I remember him also because of Sam. He used to hang out with Sam a lot.
Right.
And, he said something like, and you'll remember this, like, you know, about, you know, was it Hemingway and Hendrix and all these different people that were genius and they're all getting fucked up. And then he goes, well, it just occurred to me, all those people are dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
A wake up call.
Yeah. So, I mean, fortunately for me, I knock on wood all the time. I'm not an addict.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people are listening are going, fuck him. Like, you know, I'm an addict. And that's easy to say, dance with the devil, don't become the devil. But, you know, I'm just fortunate. Like, I could still get fucked up once in a while and not go crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think that's from being around such
idiots,
over the edge people?
Idiots. Yeah. Being around idiots.
Like in the 80s, you know?
Yeah. My dad, you know, was fucked up and all the comics were fucked up and all my friends at Beverly Hills High School were fucked up. You know, and a lot of them are dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, Sam's gone, you know?
A lot of my friends are dead. My friend Peter Bill, Tony Bill's son, who Tony Bill directed a lot of big films. Peter Bill was one of my good friends. He fucking OD'd and died. My friend Rick Calamari died. He was best friends with Charlie Sheen. He died. A lot of people get fucking, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I do know what you mean, man. I think with me was eventually I was like, well, I got to fucking...
Are you sober?
No, I'm not sober. Just one day was like, you know what, man? I did that.
Yeah.
There was other challenges in my mind. You know, I think you can get high. I like the idea of drugs, and I've said this over and over and over, for the creative side. Get down into the darkness. Mm-hmm. See what the hell's out there, but step out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You need those drugs to be creative and also to live your life of like, oh, I've been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think you got to have some stories.
Yeah. If you don't party ever, I think that haunts you.
Oh, 100%.
You're like,
you look at families, you know, that are very strict with their kids.
Yep.
And then their kids go away, you know, to college. And what happens?
They turn into maniacs.
They go crazy. But I really think, it's a choice. You know, it's a choice. It sounds stupid and cliche, but it really is a choice. At the end of the day, you have to look in the mirror and you have to say to yourself, you know, am I losing it or am I not losing it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
when you start making mistakes, is when I step back, you know, like if you throw a beer in an A&R guy's face.
Oh shit.
It's gangster for a little while,
but then
it's bad luck. You know what I mean? And also I think a lot of people, of course people get high and get crazy, but I think that the publicists spin it to make it even way more radical than they are. So people try to live up to that, like, you know, like Morrison, he would just smoke, you know, weed and do pills and coke all day or whatever. I don't know what drugs he did, but what I'm saying is they get into these fantasy things. I'm like that. And I was like, he's not like that, like, you know, every all day. You know, he wouldn't have made those great
everyone
records.
Does what they do for who they are. Everything works for different people. But for me, you know, you know, and I think everyone thinks like when I did my films or MTV, I was always fucked up, and I really wasn't, you know. I am more free, and I feel looser when I'm on camera, you know, when the camera's rolling.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's where that's where I feel like high.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I
don't need to get, you're working, yeah. Everything's going.
Or I'm in character, or I'm playing around with someone or whatever. I don't need all that. You know, so.
What time in your career do you decide the wheeze is done?
The wheeze will never be done.
Yeah, 100%. I get it.
I mean, it's, you know, it's part of who I am, you know what I mean? And, I'd have to say, like, where I started to kind of, I think it was like Pauly Shore's Dead.
Right.
You know, when I did that. And that was kind of
like killing the whole persona.
Yeah, it was kind of like a funny way to do it, way where I wasn't taking myself so serious doing it.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was like, excuse me at the burp. We just had the counter.
The counter.
Sorry.
That was kind of wheeze there.
Yeah. No, it was, you know, it was, you know, a lot of people, you know, when you do something every year, whether it's a movie or something, you're in the public eye for a long time, like I was, in such a big way, whether it was MTV or the films or specials, every year was like a big, you know, thing. And then all of a sudden that got taken from me, you know, for whatever reason.
Right.
Whether my shit was tired, whether I didn't want to do it, whether they didn't want me to do it, whatever it was, it stopped. So
the Pauly Shore machine.
Yeah, yeah, it stopped, you know, and it crashed and burned, whatever.
Did you get depressed or anything?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, what were you going
through? Let me answer the other question, because I'm just telling you about the Wheeze being dead or whatever. So then it was like, you know, so you're not in the public eye anymore. You know, you're just, there's that thing, you know what I mean? And then, but the public doesn't get it. The public's like, dude, where's your movie, bro? I haven't seen you in a couple of years. Like, what's going on? Right? Like,
when you're out and about?
Yeah, when you're out and about. You know, like, it's that time of year, bro. You're supposed to, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
What's up? So then that's when I came up with the idea, like, what do I have to fucking kill myself to become? And I thought of that as like a funny idea, you know, for a film.
Absolutely.
So then it was, you know, kind of like a make-believe story about what happened to me. So it's basically, you know, for the fans to be like, what happened? Well, this is what happened, even though that didn't happen, but it kind of happened.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a funny-ass film.
Yeah.
I mean, my point is, you've always been working.
Yeah.
I think people...
No, I know, but the thing is just the audience's perception.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, the audience perception is if they don't see you, then you're not working.
Yeah.
But to what you just said is, yeah, I haven't stopped working. I actually have worked now more than before because, you know, I put myself in my career in this position, you know, where I have to get out of the hole.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that to me is when I became more funnier.
You're right.
You
well,
know,
I think you're extremely funny when I watch the sets, because one, I know a lot of people that have been famous and then they've lost it and they lose everything. They become an angry, angry person. You are probably one of the nicest guys I've ever met who was how big they were, you know, especially to me. You got to understand. I'm growing up. I'm way into rock and roll, and the Wheeze is on MTV, and I'm thinking this guy has the ultimate life. He's traveling around. He's at a Warrant record release party at Limelight. He's at Miami Beach, you know, spring break or whatever. So when I see the guy up there now as an adult, it's almost funnier to me because you're like, yeah, man, I'm up here. You know what I mean? Like, and you're delivering some funny shit, and then you'll drop the wheeze. Like I said, some people in the crowd laugh. The other people are like, what's the wheeze?
Right,
and it's this great thing. You know?
Yeah, I talk about this thing that it's funny that it's been so long since I've done anything like mainstream, like big, you know, that there's like people that are 25 and under that might not know who I am.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that was my point of if you start working like a Bobcat did, at which you are, you're always writing, eventually you're Pauly Shore. Because the Weeze people stop going out. Maybe they go out once a year. I'm not saying on tour, but like in town. And it's just normal people at the store watching, you know, all the comics now. So you're in the middle of the lineup and you're killing. So you're completely relevant and funny as fuck. So it's not like, oh, who's this guy? You know what I mean?
No, I'm, I talk about what I talk about. So,
yeah.
Yeah. You know.
What, let me ask you something. What do you think, like, over the years has changed in comedy? You see, you've been at that store forever, you know? Do you think it's, you were saying earlier you thought it's wilder back then, but do you love the comedy now that you're seeing?
And I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier. It's the same thing with music and actors and movies. I'm just not moved by anything as much anymore. And I don't know if it's because it's not as good as it was or because I'm older now and I'm desensitized.
Right.
So it's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I mean, like, I thought that, like, last night's show was great at the store. I thought everyone had a good time. But was I fucking dying laughing? No.
Right,
but when I used to watch Eddie Murphy or Dice or Kennison or Roseanne or Paul Rodriguez, you know, Jim Carrey, was fucking dying laughing.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Now, you got a documentary out on Showtime right now.
Yeah.
We were out on the road, I don't know, 5 months ago, and you loaned it to me, and it was almost too brutal for me to see on my own in a hotel room on the road when you're lonely. But it's called Stand Alone. It's on Showtime. I watched the whole thing, and I was just blown away how real it was. And it really captured, like, this man who's an adult now, out working still, you know, in the middle of America. Like, you're almost...
It's like trying to turn stones anywhere I go, you know?
Yeah. And it's just so heartfelt. I loved it, man. I mean, it's fire. You see these people, they love you from back in the day, and there they are with their VCR cassettes or whatever to get signed. And you're running the show. You're booking the shows. There's an amazing scene where you click the room. I always say I learn things from different comedians because you got to stop and listen when, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Some people just blow by and think they know everything. But over the course of 5 years, I've learned things from every comic by sitting down. And what I learned from that was clicking the room.
Yeah.
Where people rip you off. A click in the room is the guy says it holds 400. And right when you get to the venue, you clicked every seat in there. And you said, I've got 440.
Right, right.
He's going to make an extra $3,000 off you if you wouldn't have known. Just come in, boozed up.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, most of these club owners or managers, they're pretty legit. But you never know. Sometimes if you go into a song, I do it a lot when I go to places that I haven't played.
Yeah.
You know, but places that I play,
there's
like
no
the
trust.
Funny Bones or the improvs, we have relationships. I still click, but that's mostly just for myself. But I don't feel like, you know. And the way I always work it, though, is like if I click, say, like 300 and they click, like, say, you know, 380 or 280, that's off 20. And I'm like, okay, let's meet in the middle.
Right.
So we'll say that it's 290.
Right.
So you always kind of meet in the middle. You don't squabble over.
Yeah, 10 seats.
No.
Because you know it's only 10 seats. It could be some other scams, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's also, it has to do with, you know, a lot of times comics, you know, they get door deals. So you make your money off of how many butts are in the seats as opposed to a guarantee.
Right.
I assume like D'Elia or Whitney or Russell Peters, you know, these guys that are really hot right now, they don't have door deals.
He's doing...
It's a guarantee.
Yeah, like straight Russell up, Peters 50 grand, shows up, 1 hour.
It's 50 grand for, in, you know, they don't have to think about the seats.
I don't care what you got out there.
Yeah.
I've got my money.
Right. So for me, it's like, you know, I have to make sure, you know, if it's a percentage deal. And I do a percentage deals a lot just because that's part of... Wait, I have to burp again. Sorry. I do percentage deals a lot because... It's a show in good faith, because what happens is if you go and perform at a club and you have a guarantee and you don't do well, then they're writing you a check that they don't want to write you.
Yeah, they're bummed.
They're bummed. And I don't never want to leave that way. I never want to leave the club, you know, the club owner being stiffed. I want what's fair. If I put the butts in the seats, then I want that money. If I don't put the butts in the seats, I don't want your money.
Right. It's a give and take.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be times in your career where you're completely red hot, and there's going to be times when you're not, and you still want to be booked.
Right.
I understand.
You want to be respectful.
You can't just go out robbing dudes.
No.
Because you're not coming back. Right. The guarantee was 10 grand.
Yeah.
The guy goes, well, we only made four. I don't give a fuck. Pay up.
Yeah, I don't
You're
do
not
that.
Coming back.
Yeah. And if that ever happens, then I give them the money usually.
That's funny because a huge comedian just told me he did that. And I learned that in the park. He felt bad that they didn't make all the money, and he gave him part of their money back.
Yeah.
I learned that right there on the spotlight.
Because it's about relationships.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're all a family.
Everyone's
in it. The club owners, you know, the comics, we're all, you know, they're all my family.
You need the club open.
Yeah.
You can't have 10 dudes come through and they close.
Right.
You know, that doesn't do any good.
Right.
It's insane. So this... The doc came out.
Yeah.
It's out on Showtime right now. It got great reviews, right?
Yeah, it's been nice. I actually haven't read anything bad about any of it.
It's great.
Which is like the first time in my career, I think.
Did you pay for it yourself? How'd you do that? You just out shooting it?
Yeah, that's kind of like, I mean, that's kind of like the business that I've been in. It's all like, I'll pay for stuff. And then once I edit it, how I want it, and then I give it to my agents, and then we'll together as a team we'll go and sell it,
right?
And you know, and that's it.
And then you've seemed to have a pretty good relationship with Showtime because you did that other thing with them last year, right? Or a couple years ago. What was that thing?
The political one?
Yeah.
Yeah, politics.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. I've done a lot of stuff with Showtime. Me and Showtime have a really nice relationship, and you know, I'm lucky they're out there and, you know, for me to distribute my stuff. So
what do you got coming up next? You're going to...
There's the podcast out right now.
Oh, yeah. What's it called?
It's called Pauly Shore's Interested.
This is a great podcast format because you have one guest on.
Yeah.
And then you bring another guest in that might know the person. They listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And in between some of it, you take breaks and interview the guy. Like, what do you think, this guy? You know?
Yeah. Like for instance, I had the Chris Rock one.
Yeah.
Where I interviewed Chris Rock. And then I had Tommy Davidson do commentary on the Chris Rock one. It's almost like the old DVDs. You'd hear like a director's commentary. It was kind of like the director would comment on the film.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like that for audio.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
How'd you come up with that format? Just thought of it one day? Because it's really a great original.
Me and my agent were talking, and you know, and my friend Miles, we're just talking. I'm like, oh, if I'm going to do this, because everyone's doing a podcast, I got to do something that like isn't being done. You know what I mean? Like, how do we, you know? And we just started talking about interviewing people, and then, I don't know.
And now you do them in a series, right? Almost
like
13 episodes?
No, it's like 20 episodes.
And then chill
for a
while?
And then chill, yeah.
Right.
So, you know, it's just if you go to iTunes or you go to Podcast One or my website, you can see, you know, you can download all the episodes. But they're pretty cool. I'm really excited. Like, when is this going to air?
Tomorrow.
Oh, shit. This is going to air tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. So, oh, fuck. Okay, you should definitely promote this week's episode because this is a really good episode.
Oh, what is it?
It comes out on Wednesday.
Cool.
What's today?
Today's Sunday.
Sunday. Okay, cool. So this comes out on Monday.
Yep.
Oh, cool. So the Wednesday one's awesome. I really, 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 really like this one. I interview Larry Rudolph. Larry Rudolph is Britney Spears, Miley Cyrus, and Steven Tyler's manager.
Wow. Same guy.
Same guy.
Still now?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he manages Miley and Britney and the whole thing. He's been with Britney forever. And Steven Tyler.
That had to be a lot of work. Huh? All three of those are the biggest crazy personalities and radicalness.
So I interview him, who's a friend of mine, a really nice guy. And then I had Randy Jackson comment. Randy from American Idol.
Who also played in Journey on bass back in the late 80s.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's Pauly Shore interviews, Larry Rudolph, Randy Jackson comments.
Wow.
And it's pop music. Every episode has a theme.
Yep.
Like, for instance, the last week's was Pauly interviews Whitney Cummings, Chris D'Elia comments about sitcoms. Because they were on a sitcom together.
Yeah, exactly.
So...
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And then you're out on tour always, right?
Yeah, if you
New
just
Year's
go to
Eve,
website.
You're going to be at Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'll be at a casino in Oklahoma.
You know what one?
I forgot the name.
Just go to your website.
Yeah, go to my website.
What is it, PaulyShore.com?
PaulyShore.com, yeah.
I got to thank you, man, for... when I came to the store, it was rough.
Yeah.
You know? And like a 44-year-old guy trying to make it in there. And I remember about 2 years in, you watched my set and you were said like, hey, man, you're funny. Just do this and that a little more. Uh-huh. Don't do that. And I listened to you and I respect you and I love everything about your mom and you. So I'm glad you did this. And thanks for all your help.
Yeah. Like I said, what you just said is like, if I didn't like you and I didn't think you were funny, I wouldn't have done this.
Right.
So like, you know what I mean? You know, you've been busting your ass, you know, age, just remember age doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, you can go down the line of all the different guys that have made it, Rodney Dangerfield to
your mom. 40. Yeah, I never knew she started that at 40.
Yeah. So don't, you know, funny's funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Relevant is what it's about.
Yeah. Relevant, but funny's funny too. You know what I mean? Like, and you're funny and, you know, you go on, you hold your own and you haven't been doing as long as all of us, but you know, you've been through it because you went through the rock thing.
Yeah.
You know, so you did that and now, you know, you're doing this and you know, and there was a guy that you kind of remind me of when I was younger. You ever hear of him? You've probably seen him. You should probably call him up and do something with him. I don't know if he's even doing stand up anymore with Willie.
Oh, Wild Willie Parsons.
Wild Willie, yeah.
Saw him at the store about a year ago. I remember him when I was growing up, though.
Yeah.
He was the biker comic.
Yeah.
Right.
He was great, dude.
Right. He looked the same. He was at the store about a year ago, except he had the long hair, but he was bald on the top. But there he was.
Doing his biker stuff?
Yeah, man. He came in. He did a spot on the Friends and Family. And I was like, whoa, they... Like, sometimes I see
I'll end with this here. I think just for you, like a direction, you should try to create a theme biker show because I think you guys can make a lot of money.
Right.
And I think that there's a big audience out there. I think if it was like you, Willie, and maybe two other people.
Yeah.
You know, or one other person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just like a theme biker, you know.
Yeah.
Just as a side thing, as your thing.
Well,
just
I'm like starting to do some of those bike rallies, you know?
Yeah.
The big ones. Like, I'm going to go out to Sturgis, and you host and do comedy at these
perfect
things.
Perfect for
and, you.
You
know, 100,000 people see you.
But I just think, like, a comedy special, or like a tour or something. I don't know.
Right.
I think it'd be cool.
I like that, but I also like so much more the rock and roll side of, like, rock people.
Yeah.
Because I feel like rock people love to go out still.
Yeah.
They just need something to go see.
Yeah.
And they're loyal. I love rock and roll. I love motorcycles more than anything, but I love the culture of rock and roll.
Yeah.
You know, it's so great. I love that just fucking, you know, you come out and people are like, yeah, let's fucking, rock. As cheesy as it sounds, man, it's lit it up. It's Hollywood, you know, that strip.
What do we do with D'Elia? We gotta attack him. You know what we gotta do? We gotta scalp him.
Yeah.
How do we could take?
Oh, if he went bald,
he gotta take off his hair, bro.
Take off his hair, Samson.
You know what
style?
We could do? We could give him some muscle relaxers and put him out, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, have someone, you know, come and just take all his hair. And then he could wake up in the morning, like on his Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing
But it
like
can't be the cool ball. It's got to be the horseshoe ball.
Yeah.
Because cool ball, if he was shaved head, he'd probably still rock. Like, like what's his name? Die Hard, you know?
That'd be so funny. D'Elia, if you're out there, we're coming for you, bro.
We're coming for your hair, bro.
Bro, weasel.
Thanks for having me at your mom's house here, man. It's pretty special. It's amazing, man.
All good.
Be here.
All good.
Love you, dude.
Love you too, bro.
Okay, there he is.
Peace
Paul
out,
Shore,
sweet
guys.
Baby weasel.
Hey, do one wheeze.
Oh, because I'm the weasel, and I'm into munching on some grind ditch, buddy. Oh.